From the KGOU studios, I'm Suzette Berlot, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Joshua Landis joins me today for an update on the recent bombing campaign against the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria.
We refuse to work with the Assad government, so we don't have anybody to take the ground. And that's going to leave us in a very difficult position because we're just going to be killing people and we're not going to be establishing something better for them on the ground.
Then I'll talk with Akash Patel, the founder of Oklahoma City's Aspiring Americans Initiative. He started the nonprofit because of his family's personal struggle with the immigration process.
The reason I do any of this is what happened to my sister. She aged out of the application because she turned 21 before we got those green cards.
The effects of immigration on students, right after this hour's news. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grelot. Joshua Landis, another week we need to spend talking about ISIS, the United States deciding and announcing that they're going to engage in a bombing campaign that started already this week with allies, with there's a coalition. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about that. And I guess now we have a strategy. We didn't have a strategy a few weeks ago. Today we have a strategy and it involves a bombing campaign against ISIS.
We do. It's not completely clear how the end game is supposed to come about, but we do have a strategy, which is classic counterterrorism. We're going to hit from the sky. We're not going to put boots on the ground. Now, that's fine in Iraq because we have partners. We have the Iraqi government and we have the Kurds in the north of the country, both of whom we're giving arms to, and we've got special forces, training, so forth, to take the territory away from ISIS. In Syria, we don't have that. We are bombing. But ISIS controls well over a third of the country. What do you do after you bomb? This is what we haven't figured that out yet. We say we're going to arm up Syrian rebels, but that's going to take a year. The rebels have been notoriously undependable. There are over 1,000 different militias, according to the CIA. Very difficult job to do that. And we refuse to work with the Assad government. So we don't have anybody to take the ground. And that's going to leave us in a very difficult position because we're just going to be killing people and we're not going to be establishing something better for them on the ground.
Well, there's some confusion about this, right, about putting boots on the ground. So General Dempsey indicated that was an option that was going to be on the table if needed, if these bombings didn't achieve their goal of destroying ISIS, which is what the initial, at least stated, goal was by the president. And then, of course, the administration came back later and said, no, absolutely not. This is not on the table. Is it on the table or is it not? And whose troops would it be? Would it be the U.S. troops? I mean, who else is going to do it, right? Like you said, they've got a lot of territory to take back, a lot of ground to cover.
There are really two issues here. One is special forces that are going to be spotting where ISIS assets are. And that, I think, they're already on the ground. We've got lots of evidence that there are special forces working to define where the targets are. The problem is you can't have American troops take over whole towns and begin to occupy this as any occupied territory, because then we'll be sitting ducks for car bombs and all those things that went wrong in Iraq. And that's what Obama is promising will not happen. But that's the problem, because already there are demonstrations that have broken out from one end of Syria to the other by Sunni rebel groups and Sunni rebel-held territory where people are saying, you should be bombing Bashar. This is anti-Sunni Arab behavior. America is just bombing Arabs again and you're coming to destroy us. And they feel akin because these are their relatives just in a different part. And yes, ISIS has taken them over, but all the buildings are being destroyed. The oil refineries were hit yesterday. So their source of income, their infrastructure is going to be destroyed by America. They want to know, who's going to bring security? How am I going to send my kids back to school? What's happening tomorrow? Are you just going to bomb me forever?
So obviously this strategy may be being counterproductive rather than productive. But I want to ask you, Joshua, I have to say that it was somewhat interesting to hear that there's this lots of new groups popping up. So ISIS obviously makes the headlines, but this new group, the Khorasan, that is apparently threatened the United States, has indicated that they are, or at least there's some sort of intelligence that suggests that they're working on an operation against the United States. So they're also being targeted throughout this campaign. What do we know about that group and others that are actually not just focused on what's going on in Syria and Iraq, but are actually looking at terrorist attacks perhaps outside that territory?
Well, that did surprise everybody that we went after this group plus ISIS. Everybody's expecting this is an ISIS war. They chopped two heads off of Americans. We're going after them. Khorasan is just an Islamic medieval name for a region. That is the region where Zawahiri and the head of al-Qaeda resides today, which is sort of Pakistan-Afghanistan area. And so this group was sent by the head of al-Qaeda to the al-Qaeda groups in Syria to help them theoretically take out leadership of other rebel groups. But also from what America says is that they're devising ways to hit the American homeland. And so we went after them. And that speaks to a number – it speaks to the fact that this is related to 9/11. This is al-Qaeda as well as ISIS. And it also is indicating to Americans in the world that this is a self-defense operation. We are hitting people that are trying to hit us because there's a big question about legitimacy. Can we just, you know, if somebody chops your head off of two of your people, can you attack them? Is that, you know, justification for going to war? So I think that answered it a little bit. But we are in a very difficult situation now because we don't really see what the exit strategy is from this operation in Syria.
All right, Joshua, thank you for your insight as always.
It's always a pleasure.
If you have any questions about this conversation for me or Joshua, you can leave them in the comments section of this story on our website, kgou.org. We're also on Twitter at WorldviewsKGOU, and I tweet at Suzette Grillot. You can also follow Joshua and find a link to his blog, Syria Comment, at Joshua_Landis. After a short break, I'm joined by Akash Patel, the founder and executive director of the Oklahoma City-based Aspiring Americans Initiative. I'm Suzette Grillot, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Grillot. My guest, Akash Patel, started the Aspiring Americans Initiative, an Oklahoma City-based nonprofit that works to connect undocumented students with educational opportunities. It's a personal passion for him. He came to the United States as a toddler, and 22 years later, his family's immigration paperwork is still being processed. Akash Patel, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you for having me.
So, Akash, you've done this really interesting thing. You've started this organization called Aspiring Americans Initiative here in the state of Oklahoma. But this has an international focus, immigration focus. Tell us about this organization and what it is you're doing with Aspiring Americans Initiative.
Sure. Aspiring Americans Initiative is a nonprofit project that was born out of my research project at the University of Oklahoma last year. And what we found in the research project was that there were a lot of immigrant students who were going through the public education system that were falling through the cracks, that they weren't going to college or some of them weren't finishing high school. And so just to sort of frame what we've been doing, I can tell you that there are about 65,000 undocumented immigrant high school students from around the country that graduate from high school every year. And of that 65,000, we know that about only 7.5% actually make it to college. And so in this senior thesis, I wanted to find out, you know, what's happening to the 92.5%. And we found that a lot of them were, you know, getting recruited into gang activity in exchange for protection from deportation. They were getting illegally employed and exploited. Oftentimes, they were getting detained and deported. And other students were falling through the cracks and dropping out. And we just lost track of them. And so Aspiring Americans Initiative is a coordinated effort with the Oklahoma City Public School District and a few other partners like DREAM Act Oklahoma to make sure that we close those knowledge gaps to make sure that all students know about their rights and opportunities to help them finish high school and actually go into college or VOTEC, community college, whatever it is, their postgraduate opportunities could be.
So before we get to this knowledge gap and the specifics of what you do, could you tell us a little bit about what motivated you to do this? I mean, this is quite a leap from a senior thesis research project to actually starting a nonprofit organization and engaging in this very important contemporary issue that we face today. What sent you down that path?
Yeah, the energy and passion behind that came from my own experiences. My family came to the U.S. From London when I was very, very young. I was just 15 months old. And because of complications with our visas and the immigration system, we accidentally overstayed those visas. And as a result, trying to get back in line was very difficult and doing things the right way. And so we did. We applied for green cards, and it took 16.5 years to get our green cards. So I got it just in time before graduating from high school to be able to apply for some other forms of financial aid and go to college. That's the good news, is that my parents and I, we got our green cards. The bad news, the reason I do any of this is what happened to my sister. She aged out of the application because she turned 21 before we got those green cards. And so she continues to be undocumented today, but enjoys having DACA, which allows her to get her work permit, driver's license, and get her PhD here at OU. But we know that a lot of our students don't make it this far. And so that's why I started the project, to make sure that more students have access to these opportunities that I got lucky to have.
Okay, so let's talk now about the knowledge gap and the things that people don't know. You just mentioned DACA,
mm-hmm.
D-A-C-A.
Yes.
Tell us about that that particular initiative and why that matters in this context of undocumented students.
Sure. So DACA, D-A-C-A, stands for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, and is President Obama's executive order from a couple years ago. And in fact, we just passed the two-year anniversary, and people are renewing those permits now. And what that means is it provides critical relief in three ways to our undocumented population who are usually pretty young. It provides them protection from deportation temporarily, gives them work permits and driver's licenses. And federal data tells us that about half of the entire eligible population in Oklahoma that could be applying for DACA are not. And navigating the public school system, doing our surveys and interviews with them tells us that that's very avoidable, that we could just be talking about DACA more efficiently and more often, be empowering counselors and teachers with this information and doing clinics and forums, informational sessions with the public school systems to make sure that everybody is applying for DACA and they know what it is.
So when you say that students aren't applying for it, that this help is there for them,
mm-hmm.
but they aren't applying for it, they don't know about it in some ways. So that's where you're saying closing that knowledge gap and making students and counselors and their parents aware of these types of opportunities. But isn't there something else that might be preventing them from taking advantage of these things? I would imagine, and you can tell me based on your case, that mm-hmm. it's sometimes very difficult to talk about one's status in terms of being an undocumented young person in this country.
Yeah, it's a very complicated situation to be in. And it's more than just having the knowledge. A lot of it is culture, is being comfortable talking about these issues, asking for help, knowing who to talk to, who do you feel comfortable to asking these questions to. And so that's part of also what Aspire Americans hopes to achieve, is by changing some of the culture, by making these conversations easier to have, by helping families and students through this process and knowing that they're not in this alone, that there are other people with them who haven't gone through the same things. And that's why before I do anything with these sessions with students and families, I tell my own story first so that they know that they're among friends, that they're among the same company, that have gone through the same issues they have. And so part of that is very cultural, is making sure that they're open to asking for help and they know where to get it.
So obviously one of the difficult things is identifying students because of the lack of knowledge about it and also the perhaps fear of discussing it. So you identify them. You're working with the Oklahoma City Public School District, you mentioned. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the specific things that you do to help bridge that gap mm-hmm. and spread the knowledge, and then extend that beyond Oklahoma City? I mean, is there a national movement along these lines? Are you collaborating and connecting with other people around the country to try to raise and heighten this issue on a national level?
Yeah, sure. And so what we're doing now specifically, we're doing a few different things. And in fact, a few weeks ago, we did our first official staff training at U.S. Grant High School, where we had the opportunity to talk to 120 teachers at once about all the relevant resources and opportunities that should be given to the students. And so that went really, really well, not just because it was a very good audience for us to give information to, but they're extremely enthusiastic. By the end of the conversation, they wanted more information. They kept inviting us back to talk to their classes privately. So we know that's going really well. Following up after those training programs, we like to invite them to clinics and forums hosted by Dream Act Oklahoma, our chief partner. And so what we do is we help students and families sign up for DACA after learning about it with the help of pro bono attorneys that we recruit to help us out to do consultations. And at those clinics and forums, we do a third thing. We identify students and families who can't afford to pay for DACA applications. They're costly. They're about $500 per person every time you have to apply and renew. So we also fundraise. Aspiring Americans partners with different sponsors and individual supporters to make sure that we can meet the needs of these students who can't afford to pay for this application. So it's a multifaceted process, and we're excited to have so many partners.
That's Akash Patel, the executive director of the Oklahoma City nonprofit organization, the Aspiring Americans Initiative. More of our conversation right after a short break. I'm Suzette Guerlot, and this is Worldviews. You're listening to Worldviews. I'm Suzette Guerlot, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies. I'm joined today by Akash Patel, a recent OU graduate and the founder of the Oklahoma City-based Aspiring Americans Initiative. Just before the break, he described his organization's work to help undocumented students sign up for Deferred Action for Childhood Arrival, or DACA, applications. Well, so you just mentioned the DREAM Act, Oklahoma. So can you tell us a little bit about that for those of us who don't remember the specifics?
Yeah.
But also how that is specifically connected to DACA and those initiatives.
Yeah. So DREAM Act, Oklahoma comes from the national movement that came up a few years ago, United We Dream. So it's the single biggest youth-led movement to help immigrant youth today. And when DACA came out, they were sort of the chief proponents to make sure that everybody was signing up for DACA. They knew what it was. They knew where to get help, where to get resources to follow through on the whole process. And so DREAM Act Oklahoma has been really helpful making sure we reach those targeted audiences to make sure everybody knows about it. And that's why it's relatively easier to have a national conversation about it because we have such big partners, recognized players in the game, if you will, who have credibility and a track record of empowering these communities.
Now, you were talking earlier about the enthusiasm that you've been greeted with in working and within the Oklahoma City Public School District, and particularly teachers that are welcoming advisors, counselors, families, and students. But there's also that other side of this, right, that some say, no, these are illegal immigrants. These are people that we try to prevent from coming into our country. This issue has been heavily politicized, right? So how do you overcome that? What is the response been on that side? I mean, I'm happy to hear there's much enthusiasm, but there's also this other side of it, right? Tell us about the reaction that you're receiving there and some of the obstacles you face in pushing this agenda forward.
And you're absolutely right. It's not an easy conversation to have with all stakeholders or all people who could possibly help. And oftentimes I get questioned with, you know, are you trying to make a culture to invite more legal immigration? Why would we want to help people who have broken the law? And so what I say is I'm not trying to advocate either of those things. We want to focus on the least political part of the entire conversation, which is empowering our young people, our students who are already here. They've been here for years. They're residents of the state. They're in the public school system, and they have so many talents, so many contributions to make to the communities, but they're being sometimes left behind by systems that were designed to facilitate their success. And that's no one's really fault. It's just a function of the complicated systems in place. And one example of why I've been able to enjoy sort of that safe space to talk about this in a way that's not political came up recently with an interview with Fox 25 where we talked about the whole time in the interview just about helping young people, helping the students. And so I thank Michael Carnuccio for that, for allowing us to have that safe space to make sure that what we're talking about, it doesn't really matter whether you're Republican or Democrat. All that matters is I would think we can all agree on at the most basic level that we should be helping our young people in the state.
Because these young people had no real say in whether they came to this country. I mean, those are the kids that you're focusing on, right? Mm-hmm. The ones that came with their parents. Parents brought them. You're not focusing on parents or the families at large, right? You're focusing on these children or people that came like yourself at a very young age.
That's right.
And didn't come by choice. You ended up here and this is your home. This is where you grew up. Can you imagine having been deported and sent back to your country of birth or your ethnic origins? I mean, that's what I think you're emphasizing, right, focusing on that.
That's exactly right. And that's been the national sentiment for decades. In fact, since the Supreme Court came out with a ruling, I think it was in the 70s with Plyler versus Doe, that public school systems around the country are not allowed to ask about immigration status because it doesn't matter. Public school education is a right for everybody. And so we want to make sure that everybody knows about what those rights entail, what resources are available to them in the system, whether it's immigration relief or education opportunities. And so that in Oklahoma City, that's still a feasible conversation to have, and that we enjoy that space to be able to make sure we have supporters helping us with that mission.
But how at all has your effort, your initiative, been conflated with the problems that we're seeing, the very recent problems that we've been seeing with unaccompanied children, not just undocumented, but unaccompanied children migrating, particularly from Central America into the United States because of this perception, perhaps, that, you know, that the United States will have a very difficult time returning children to their homes if it's dangerous and not conducive to human life. I mean, we have, you know, the considerable amount of concern about young people. How has that affected? Because that's been so visible, right? That we've heard so much about it these days. Has that affected the response to your efforts, which is, it's not exactly the same thing, right?
Sure.
But it's related. It seems like it would affect how people respond to you.
Yeah, you're right. It's really affected the tone of the national conversation and culture when we think about immigration to the United States. And so in that way, we had more complicated conversations after we had the unaccompanied minors at Fort Sill. People were asking us in the project sort of, are we doing anything for them? Or does this have implications on the public school system? And we say, no, I mean, it's not related. Of course, we have a stake in their success here in the way that the system processes their applications for migration and for how they're handled and, for example, being screened for health or whatever it was. But we know that with the Hispanic Americans, our focus is very different. We're focusing on the students who have been here for years, already enrolled in the system, already residents of the state who would otherwise be eligible for in-state tuition, those types of things. And so it's a separate conversation, but it did complicate our discussions with people when they asked what we thought about the unaccompanied minors or if we were going to be helping them. And the answer was no, was those missions are starkly different, but they're related to the same broad conversation about immigration in the United States.
And the conversation about immigration is definitely not going anywhere, right? So you've definitely gotten yourself into an area that has a complicated but yet very important future. One of the things that I think is really inspiring about your work is, and you mentioned this earlier, about telling your story and telling the story of your sister. And, you know, I think the one thing that comes out of that in reading the materials about you and speaking with you before is that there's an emphasis on all of the missed opportunities that if we don't address this issue, you know, your sister, for example, and the work that she's done in medical science areas, that those are missed opportunities if we don't find a pathway for these students, for these young people to stay in this country. They've been educated in this country. This is their home. And yet there's some missed opportunity if we send them back to someplace that isn't their home. I mean, is that what you're, you know, ultimately trying to demonstrate here? Is it's not a matter of human rights. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of all the things we'll miss if we don't address this issue.
That's exactly right. And so I use my sister as the best story for that. Is she went on to get her bachelor's from OU in microbiology. But for several years after that, wasn't able to take advantage of being able to publish her research, take internships, travel, take a job, go to the grad school program. And so DACA came out. She enrolls in DACA, starts getting her PhD in microbiology at OU. And now she's working with the Center for Disease Control through OU. And so we know that she's got a lot of huge mind for science. She's got a huge passion for public health research. And her name is Nisha. And I can't even imagine how many other Nishas are out there. And I think that's why Hispanic Americans, that's why we started it, is to make sure that we're taking advantage of the talents, the contributions, the passions, and the energy of all the other Nishas, all the other Akashas, all the aspiring Americans who are out there today just wanting to make a difference in their communities.
Well, Akash, thank you so much for being here with us today. This is such an important issue, and we appreciate the work that you're doing. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to my conversation with Akash Patel, a recent University of Oklahoma graduate who founded the Oklahoma City-based nonprofit Aspiring Americans Initiative. You can watch his February TED Talk on our website. Worldviews is a partnership between KGOU and OU's College of International Studies. Brian Hardzinski produces the show. Sarah Hurd and Holly Arias handle the digital presentation at KGOU.org. And Symphony Swift books the guests and prepares research for our interviews. For Joshua Landis, I'm Suzette Grelott.